Welcome to Level With Us, the bonusode. We're releasing some unheard content from previous interviews to explore a topic more in depth, look at it through a new lens, or different perspective. These shorter sodes will also give us the opportunity to answer any questions from listeners. So if you want to know more about a topic, or you just want us to look at a housing-related issue that we haven't yet covered, go to the Level With Us page on our website, homeportohio.org, and fill out the form. All right, let's get into it. We're back with the team from Tool Design, Catherine Gervis and Toby Otolana, who we heard from in our last episode on inclusive transportation, as well as Leah Evans, Homeport President and CEO. For this bonusode, we're discussing how we can support adding density with robust transportation options, including mass transit like light rail and bus rapid transit, or BRT. We talk about tackling our public right-of-way policies and how we can adjust them to make room for modes like biking and walking. Can we add density without having transportation options already built in for the individuals and families who inevitably need to move from one place to another? Would things like BRT and light rail be viable without first establishing density?
If we don't have transit-oriented development, it just doesn't work.
This is Catherine Gervis, Principal Planner at Tool Design Group.
Like, if we continue to build single-family homes that have huge yards and don't address the value of density, then we're not ever going to get good transit. Mm-hmm. Density has to be a piece of transit working.
That density has been missing in past conversations about mass transit options like light rail. As we discussed in our last bonusode, The Case for General Density, with Roy Lowenstein, Columbus's existing housing stock and transportation infrastructure, until recently, has been able to absorb any increases in population our region has seen. That's not the case now.
Density is an important piece of being able to make those systems work effectively.
Leah Evans, President and CEO of Homeport.
So it's not going to work if we don't have users to actually make the investment worthwhile and have the system operating. Because again, once you build it, you got to keep it going. Once it gets built, it needs users. It needs people in connection and community, not who desire to use it, but can use it for their day-to-day activities, whether that's for entertainment, whether that's for working, whether that's to go shopping. And so there's kind of this, I think, this disconnect between we need to be designing and building for it even before we have it, and we haven't had that yet. So whether that's density or even how we site activities, then we don't have that already built in preparation for now having a light rail system. So they definitely go together in that way. And if you look at our peer cities, how those that have had a successful deployment of light rail, then you see that there was some effort towards the land use policy that then supported the light rail as it came online. There's some cities that put a light rail in and it went like one place and it struggled, right? You can't just go to the stadium, that you needed to go to these, several other stops. And that's, those are some lessons that we can definitely learn from as we look across the country to see where these deployments have gone well and where they've been the most successful.
Another reason why it's difficult for Columbus or other cities that don't have light rail yet to make that jump, it's expensive.
Toby Otolana, project planner at Tool Design Group.
You put it on a scale comparison that how we subsidize auto travel, maybe it's not as expensive, but that's not how it's ever framed, right? You just get a price tag and a headline. That, I think, is hard for people because it's expensive and it's a big change. And then I think the other aspect of it, to what you said, Leah, is who benefits from it? It is a regional investment, and you have to start somewhere and end somewhere in your first phase. And so I think that's where that regional and multi-jurisdictional coordination comes in. That's where communication and educating the public comes in, because there's going to be someone who's paying for that through their taxes that is 20 miles away from it and doesn't see the benefit to them. And so I think that's where those pieces come in. And I think that's a factor, too, that politicians and policymakers, of course, have on their mind.
But we can and need to start somewhere. Columbus is growing every day, and the transit options we have now just don't make sense for us anymore. Catherine suggests a few ways to come at the issue.
We don't talk about how much we subsidize single occupancy vehicles. Mm-hmm. And when people talk about, oh my gosh, how much is that bike lane going to cost? Or how much is transit going to cost? For the cost of a single freeway ramp, we could build a comfortable bike network. Transportation is expensive. Let's admit that. Let's admit how much we subsidize the transportation network. Even if we only talk about right-of-way, like the stuff from curb to curb, we communally own all of that. Mm-hmm. And we've decided to give our most resourced travelers, people who can afford to own, operate, and maintain a car, all of this space that is communally owned, rather than thinking about how do we carve this space up so that we have a bus rapid transit lane that can efficiently move people from one place to another, so that we have a sidewalk network that is dignified for people to walk on, so that we have a bike network that can allow people to bike or use a scooter or skateboard or move from one place to another for those shorter trips. Like, thinking about how we're investing in our communal wealth, that public right-of-way, we have to have an honest conversation about that and who we privilege and who we don't.
Whichever comes first, Toby says we have the opportunity to try something, anything, now. And we can look to success stories from other cities to see what that something could be.
Density and transit, which comes first, I think, of course, they go hand in hand. And being willing to try things, I think, mm-hmm. is important, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to, like, avoiding and being intentional about avoiding displacement. Mm-hmm. Transit maps exist, you know, mm-hmm. people can look at those and make decisions about where they want to invest and things like that. Trails, you know, I think there are studies in Austin where they saw that developers were looking at trails and transit maps, mm-hmm. And using that to guide their investment. And so we have that knowledge. Mm-hmm. Let's be intentional. If you go after federal funding, you have a long time before you're building anything. Yeah. You have time to put policies in place, to pilot policies and see what works better, to you know, do a second pilot, yes. and see if that works better for people. Mm-hmm. And so I think that takes a lot of organization and being strategic and having a plan from the beginning about how you're going to roll things out. But I think it's very possible. And it comes back down to, like, breaking down those silos so that your land use decision or land use policymakers are ready to go when you put in that grant application. So that's just to the Department of Transportation.
Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.